The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Tony Payne and Cole Hammack. Today, we're going to hit some timeless and talked about money myths. Some of these keep resurfacing through social media and marketing. I thought that would be kind of fun conversation.
Awesome.
Amidst the TikTok generation where everybody's going for their financial planning advice.
This is good.
I know, looking at Tony over there, we're gonna get into some interesting conversation here.
You know, I get my advice from things like newspapers and such, you know.
Newspapers.
TikTok. We'll talk about this.
Excuse me. You still get the newspaper?
Right? Actually, you know what? Both of those might be full of some misstatements nowadays.
Yeah.
So let's talk about all the money myths that are out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Okay, the first one is you need to be rich to invest. Who wants to take that one?
I think we can probably both take it. I'll start, though. You don't. Is that how we're doing the show? Is that?
Yeah.
I just say that you don't, and then we move on to the next one.
Just a conversation.
No.
Just a conversation.
So the idea is any money, any flexibility, any cash flow can be used to invest. It doesn't matter if you were worth $10 or $10 million. The idea is that as you get paid, you're setting yourself up for success. So you might not be rich today, but having that mindset of, okay, well, what do I need to do to better position myself long term? Someday you will. So again, you don't have to start as that $10 million or that trust fund kid or that whatever, but just take it seriously, start early, and you will get there.
What kinds of accessible ways should people start?
Yeah, I think that the easiest one, and just in the sense that you don't necessarily have to set something up or try really hard, I guess, just be a 401k or a 403b or just something set up through the employer. Because then it's a payroll deduction. It's a little more out of sight, out of mind. It's just automated directly through your paycheck that it's easy to set up those contributions to it. It's easy to get that set up. It's easy to get the actual account rocking and rolling that you can just set it and forget it and then come back after a couple of years and realize that, yeah, we made a lot of money just by not paying attention.
Mm-hmm. You can also take a look at your lifestyle. I can remember my mom smoked 3 packs a day. For years
That's
and years and years,
I
think
day.
40 years total, in total. Mm-hmm. And she did the math one day, you know, with what she spent on cigarettes. This was back in the day, of course. You know, if you can just kind of shave off a little bit of your lifestyle to, you know, get serious and put a little bit of money aside, you don't have to really be a millionaire to be sensible enough to know you should save.
Yeah, and that's the time value of money aspect, too. Because I think if you sit down and figure, okay, well, what's $1 worth today when you're spreading that out over 30 years, that $1 today after invested, something like $7 to $10, depending on how aggressive you are, after 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So every $1 that we spend just on whatever, whether it's the fast food or the cigarettes or the everyone jokes and says the avocado toast, right? I don't know that that's crushing anybody, but that's the talking point. That can go a long way towards your future if we're thinking about how can we carve that out for that long-term aspect instead of just what's in front of us today.
No more avocados, Tony.
I love avocados.
I love avocados.
You still have avocados.
I can't imagine
you should still have avocados. They're good for you.
They are expensive.
Now, we did do that. We had that discussion. I don't have the math in front of me, but whether it was the coffee, the toast, whatever it is, whatever. Everybody's got a little something different. Do that compound math like you said, Cole, because that's the idea. What if this was growing at 3%, 7%, 10% over the next 30, 40 years? Maybe that piece of toast really does add up. Maybe that thing does add up.
Yeah.
And at least be conscious of it. If you're still setting plenty of dollars aside, well, then enjoy that thing now. And that's
Absolutely.
Part of planning and awareness, because the other part
and
of
balance.
That myth of...
And balance,
yes,
right?
And that's so important.
When that myth of you have to be wealthy to invest or you have to be rich and have... In some ways, that used to be more true, though. because there were so many minimums on talking to a broker, talking to somebody to open an account, being able to buy into a mutual fund. I mean, some of these things had $5,000, $100,000 minimums.
Great point,
and now with technology and the way that the internet's really helped revolutionize things, and I'm talking about it 40 years later, but this is these are where some of these myths started. Mm-hmm. And you think about nowadays where you can get online, open an account for free, you're trading in your pocket for, you know, pennies on the dollar almost. What a wonderful thing. So the idea of you can't get access to be able to invest, if you've got a smartphone, if you've got access to the internet, you can invest.
Get your CFP first, right? Get your certified financial planner before you do that. I would never think to go on my phone and invest money
without
the knowledge.
Well, you've got to start somewhere. And if we're talking about those that are starting somewhere, they're not going to talk to a CFP first because even us, we have minimums. I mean, we know that there's a compliance cost, kind of that cost of time where there's a starting point. There's that entry point where hiring somebody makes sense, where it's not for everyone to hire a planner or have a, you know, it's for everyone to have a plan, but not to hire a planner. So some of those entry level, you know, I hate to even name the names of them because they're all different, but some of those brokers you can get in your pocket or on your phone, that may be what the way to start. And then after that, doing your own research, talking to advisors, hopefully, then you ease into that CFP and, hey, I really need some real help here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of fine-tune it after that.
I think so. I mean, we're biased. We'd always love to have everyone have a certified financial planner working with them, but I know the reality of time, scalability, you know, all of that, where if you were starting out, whatever age you were, whatever phase of life you are, if you're somebody restarting, well, then fees are the number one killer to a lot of growth in investing, and that's part of this myth. If you can keep fees low, it doesn't matter how much money you have invested. It'll grow for you if you keep the fees very low and if you avoid some of those minimums that are out there.
Okay, here's a big one. You're going to like this one, Tony.
Oh, I like it.
And it's actually the landscape, the culture right now. Buying a home is always better than renting.
Ooh, that's a great one. As a renter, I might be a little biased here, but is it always better to own a home? Well, I don't know about that one. And you know, favorite sentence or favorite statement, it depends. But why? Why does it depend? Well, it depends on the phase of life. It depends on your goals and deep down, how well are you at managing cash flow sometimes? I mean, as a homeowner, I think most people can attest, when you have a trip to Home Depot or Lowe's, it's at least $500 for anything real. Nowadays, it's more like $1,000 for anything real. When you have a rent payment, you know your monthly obligation. Hey, when that leak came, when that thing happened, you call the landlord, they come fix it, they deal with that. They deal with that part of the inflation. So it's interesting. It really depends. But sometimes renting is better. And I know there's a couple other reasons too, Cole.
Yeah, well, I'll just kind of piggyback on that, and then I'll get into another reason. But one of the phrases that I heard that I liked a lot is when you're renting, that monthly payment is the most you're going to pay. When you're paying a mortgage, that's the least you're going to pay. Right, because you know you have your principal, the interest, the property taxes, and the insurance. That insurance is going to go up over time. The property taxes are going to go up over time. That's just natural. But everything that you referenced, Tony, all those issues that may arise, it's not as simple as just calling the landlord saying, hey, I need this fixed. You got to deal with it. You have to make that trip, or you have to hire that person that's going to do it, and that does add up.
And maybe it goes along with myths, but some of the things that I feel like we're just so used to hearing, common phrasing, you know, if I'm renting, I'm paying someone else's mortgage.
Yep.
I'm throwing money away, something like that. And I might challenge back, I do. Well, if you're an owner and you don't have children in the school district, are you throwing your money away on property taxes? If you're somebody who owns, are you throwing your money away on insurance every year? I mean, that homeowner's insurance beyond what a renter's would cost. I mean, there's a lot of other costs that go along with that that you could think about. Is that throwing the money away when you get a mortgage? There's a lot of interest, a lot of closing costs over the life of that. So unless you're paying cash, which most people don't, for the entire price of the home, well, you're giving money away to the bank. So it's the same idea. Maybe it makes sense, but to just phrase it as, oh, you're giving money away to somebody else, well, you might be giving money away too when you're owning.
Mm-hmm. When is it ideal to say, as a renter, it's time to buy?
Ooh, great question.
Yeah. So I think one of the perks of renting is, well, maybe we need flexibility.
Can I just stop for a second? I just want to revel in Tony's sentence just now. Uh-oh. I want to revel in the fact that he just said it was a great question.
I love it.
I just really want to revel
in
that.
Tracy,
let's see if, Michael, can you play that back a couple more times? Do like an echo effect?
Yeah, that'd be
make
great.
Make it
thanks.
Your ringtone now, Tracy.
That's a great
just
idea.
Just loop that. That'd be perfect.
All right, fair enough.
Can I do that?
I try to use them judiciously, okay?
That's good. You made her day. That's perfect.
All right, perfect.
Sorry, go ahead. As you were.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the benefit with renting is the aspect that you have the flexibility that comes with that. So whether you're traveling a lot and we don't want to be locked down and have someone basically house sit kind of thing, or maybe we know that we're just wanting to be in this specific area for a short-term period of time. So I'll pick myself, for example. I live in Canal Winchester. I'm all of 10 minutes away from my mom, which is close enough to be convenient, but not too close to be inconvenient, if you guys know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Love her to
I
death,
do not.
But 10 minutes is great. but at some point, Aiden's going to be a little bit older that... Well, he's not going to need Nana to watch him 3-4 days a week kind of thing, where then we don't need that same flexibility that we have right now, because I'm not interested in buying. We're not staying put long term. So when it makes sense to, okay, well, we're laying down roots. We know that school district we want to be in. We know where we kind of want to settle for the next 10, 15, 20 years. Then home ownership makes a lot more sense, because that should be a long term play, not a short term play.
Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about family. You're kind of looking. You're forward thinking. You're not just thinking about an action.
Yeah.
What's the next step? Kind of a mindset.
Exactly. Because it creates, I think, a lot more headaches than anything. If every time you pick up roots to move to another place, even short term, and you're buying a house every step of the way, then you have to deal with the after effect of, okay, well, now I need to sell that house to buy a new house, and trying to time everything right. Here, once we're done on one lease, we just hand the landlord the key. We go on about our day. We don't have to worry about trying to line everything up perfect to get into that next place.
Like you were saying there, the other side of it, when is it time to buy a home, or when might it be time? What are the reasons? You said some of them, Cole. You know, when you want to set down roots, when you know, hey, this is something I want to own, perhaps pass on to others. And to me, a real starting point is you know you can afford it. I mean, being able to have a decent cash reserve to say, yes, I can put the money down, I'm able to save, I'm cash flow positive, I'm not paying PMI. What is that? That's that private mortgage insurance. Basically, it's a privilege of being a homeowner insurance that does not much for you, but it does things for the bank. So you want to avoid that, I think, as much as possible. So if you can avoid PMI,
how do you avoid it?
By having at least 20% down in most cases. So if you can save up for your down payment, you've got your at least 20% down. Well, now you've bought yourself a little bit of equity. You don't have the PMI, and hopefully you still have a cash reserve, positive cash flow, because now that you're an owner, you're going to have a lot of surprises, things you didn't think about. And that may be okay if you bought within your budget, if you're not house poor. Again, we're not opposed to home ownership. It's a wonderful thing. But the idea is it has to align with your goals. You know, I've had people, they want to open a shooting range at their own home. They want to be able to do that. You can't do that when you're renting. If you want to do that, if you want to have a pool sometimes even, you've got to put it in and you've got to own it. You've got to maintain it. These are goals that you can't always achieve through renting. And I know there are numerous other ones where other people may have other goals, things that they value, and to be able to do that, raising animals, being able to raise, you know, their own vegetables. These are things you really can't do as a renter either. So when you know that, these are other reasons why I might say, oh, buying makes sense for you.
Is there a best practice or sort of a boilerplate percentage that people should have saved in addition to their down payment once they're in the house?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
good question.
Whoa.
Wow. Sorry, Tracy.
Yeah, so
I feel very special right now.
So it's not going to be a specific. It won't be a specific number, but it's going to be based on the situation. So essentially, you still want that cash reserve above and beyond that down payment. So that's going to come down really largely to comfort, whether that's 3 months of living expenses, 6 months, a flat $50,000, whatever it is. So the idea of, God forbid, we move into that home and we're laid off. We didn't just set ourselves up for massive failure because we're taking on this new debt, these new home payments, these new everything. And then we lost our job, but we just dropped that entire down payment because we can't get that back. So having that cash reserve beyond that, being able to have a little bit of comfort in that worst case scenario is crucial. And then if we're thinking about, okay, well, we're buying a house that's maybe not new, it's going to need a little bit of love, maybe we start thinking about having some of those remodeling costs set aside or some of those furniture costs set aside beyond just the down payment and beyond that cash reserve.
Avoid credit card use. I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about the emotion behind owning a home. I want this now.
Yeah.
I want to do this to it now. You justify and rationalize upgrades and updates and changes. And if you don't have it, if you don't have the pot, you're going to use credit cards. And that's a very scary end.
Yeah. So exactly to your point, like credit cards, excellent tool. They should be used, but only responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's going to use a credit card basically to bridge cash flow, then you are creating a long-term disaster because those interest rates are growing at 20, 25, 30% generally. And if you pay the minimum payments, which a lot of people get into the habit of doing, it can take you 30 years to pay off those credit cards in many cases. So you're just basically creating a ticking time bomb. No doubt.
What about people who say, I'm going to take part of my 401k and put it as a down payment down on my house?
Well, that's doable. I mean, what about people who say that? That's doable. That's an option. But then you also have to plan, like you said, Cole, for all the negatives that could be out mm-hmm. there. Because you could lose your job. And then what happens when you lose your job? Oh, that 401k loan is immediately mm-hmm. due. That means taxes in most cases. Then you've got to have money for the tax bill. On top of that, you just took this new house on. So you've got a new house payment, as Cole mentioned, and you really don't have that flexibility to fly across the country and get that new job. Because if overall the economy's down, your house might be underwater even, mm-hmm. or there may not be that next job within a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few things there, and I'm going to add one of my own myths here.
Ooh.
And Cole, you and I have talked about this. We've gone back and forth. And one of those, and it really ties into the debt and what we're talking about here, is I'll use the phrase boomer. The relevant part of everyone thinking that boomers are very well off, that they bought mm-hmm. their homes for so cheap and now they're selling them for so much more, that's only relevant if they didn't refi along the way. And you think about how many people refinanced in the 90s, refinanced in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Even if you took money out at 3, 4%, look at the amortization on that, how much interest you may have paid along the way. So it's still dependent upon good behavior, having that one house, not upgrading, not being house poor, saving for your retirement, taking advantage of the growth in the stock market. I mean, it's not a myth that everybody just became wealthy by buying a house for cheap. They had to do the right things along the way. So I'm using that paraphrase of boomer here, Tracy, but when we think about myths and some of the social media things going around,
right.
That's one we see a lot. And again, I can't help but push back a little because we know that there are those who didn't make the right choices mm-hmm. that are trying to recover, piece it together. And that's where, again, no offense here, it's the other side that you had to do those right things along the way to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of debt. Let's talk about good debt and bad debt. I know you love this topic, Cole.
Yeah. So, honestly, good debt, I mean, that's going to be something like a student loan, in many cases, an affordable mortgage. So not all mortgages are good debt. I know we've seen plenty of those where maybe we get in a little over our
right?
skis. Auto loans, to a certain degree, again, as long as we're being responsible, can be good debt, right? It's short-term, they're reasonable interest rates, and as long as the payments are appropriate, with what we're trying to do with everything else,
that's
appropriate
nice.
Matters.
Yeah, that's nice.
Then you could argue that's good debt. Bad debt, on the other hand, that's going to be any of that consumer debt, anything that's usually over about 10% in interest rates, and a lot of that tends to be credit card debt. So the idea that we're basically, again, just digging that hole deeper and deeper because it's so hard to get out of that when that's growing at 15, 20, 25, 30% on an annual basis if we're not paying that debt off when we use it. So the good debt, it's either getting us from point A to point B or basically furthering our career, getting us to somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Bad debt's basically doing the things that we want to do.
Shoes and
mm-hmm.
depreciating
we want
assets.
These things, but we don't
shoes
need
and
these
Pokemon
things.
Cards. Yeah.
But Pokemon cards are an investment, Tracy. Stop mm-hmm. it.
Whoa. Easy there, Cole.
Beanie Babies.
That was satire.
Beanie Babies. That's a good one.
Is there a, I think there is, a ratio of debt that's acceptable to your income?
Not really. I mean, when you hear something like that, these rules of thumb and these generic things, to think about it, is 0% a bad ratio? No, it means you're debt-free. Does it mean you're not utilizing leverage or maybe you have assets that are just sitting? Maybe. I mean, what's the value in a paid-off house? It's not having a mortgage. It's not having interest. But that money that is tied up in that home, well, what else could it be doing for you? And that doesn't always mean take out a maximum mortgage and borrow or invest or anything. But the idea is be deliberate. Have a plan. Because the idea that you're just packing everything together, debt bad, you know, investing good, these sorts of things, that's where Cole was going through the good debt, which we love. I mean, if you can utilize leverage responsibly, well, then you're growing even better.
But are all credit card, is all credit card debt bad, considered bad?
If it's a 0% promotion and basically instead of paying it off, you're putting the difference in a high yield savings account, for example, and then before that promotional period ends, you pay off all that debt, that can be good. So if you're taking advantage of 0%, but outside of that particular instance, yeah, I think I can confidently say all other credit card debt's bad.
So don't use credit card. Stop using credit cards at all costs. Is that the general idea?
Absolutely not. Stop using credit cards irresponsibly.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
You never want to use that as a bridge or a crutch.
The only time I've said, I'm trying to come up with exceptions, you know, out of all these 20 plus years doing this stuff, maybe starting a business. I mean, you think about somebody who's trying to get it together, start that business, get off the ground. It's certainly a giant risk.
Yeah.
But when you're thinking about trying to pool capital together, and it's been such a great thing to work with people who started in that big pile of debt, started their company, started their business, living their idea, and then growing that and paying down that debt. But I know if we looked back in time, there's going to be a couple people that were upside down, maybe doing what we might have not said was the best thing, cashing in a 401k even to start a business. But even then, that's an investment that hopefully you're managing, you're diversified. That's not a recommendation to do that. Yeah. But as we think about, you know, why could you do that and feel okay? That might be the only other reason.
Makes sense. This one is I think we covered it earlier, but you should wait until you're older to start saving for retirement.
Yeah, I'd say by and large we covered that. Again, the idea is that the sooner you do it, the much further ahead that you will be. And realistically, the less you need to save on a monthly or annual basis just because you have so much time working for you.
Mm-hmm.
So starting it soon, doing it often, that's really the best way to invest.
The power of compound interest.
Absolutely.
Financial planning is only for people with complicated finances. This is kind of strange point to come across.
No, I think I hit on that one a little earlier. I mean, the idea that everyone needs a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter where you're at in life, what you have going on, you need to have a plan. Whether or not you need to hire a financial professional or a certified financial planner to help you, that may be a different story. There may be different phases of life where I need that help, others where, hey, every dollar I have, I need to either get out of debt, I need to start saving, maybe I'm helping a parent. I mean, there's reasons why you may have to go alone for a bit, but hopefully doing things like this, investing in your own education, you're growing to the point that, yes, it makes sense to utilize someone where I can really take advantage of this and use a planner in conjunction with the plan you've had all along.
It's such as a person who's not a CFP, I think about dealing with Social Security and Medicare, even long-term insurance, long-term care. All of those things are so intimidating to me. I can't imagine doing those alone.
Right?
It's just such a universe.
Right?
There are so many opportunities to save on taxes and so forth that you, as an every person, you wouldn't know. So reaching for help is probably really helpful for somebody in that mindset.
Yeah. Great point.
Should you pay off your mortgage early? That's one that I hear a lot about.
Yeah, probably your favorite phrase, Tracy, but...
It depends.
So I think kind of what Tony was getting at earlier is it depends on what your goals are. If we were to pay it off, then we have all that money basically sitting in the house. But what could we have done otherwise? So if you have something like a 2.5-3% rate, can we outperform that in the market? Maybe. Maybe it makes more sense to invest. But at the same time, if it's keeping you up at night, we're debt averse, we don't want to have that mortgage, whatever the rate may be, then maybe that's the right answer. So I think it really depends on the person, the emotions, and what we're trying to accomplish as well.
Yeah, that's definitely the right answer, Cole, I think. It's not a spreadsheet answer. Yeah. Certainly, we know if there's debt and there's interest charged to it, that's a cost. If I have the money, get rid of that cost. But there's so many other factors, and some of them are emotional, and also your goals. What are your plans here?
Yeah, everybody's just, they're so different.
We talk a lot about paying yourself first, and in the past I've always heard that the 10% mark is the starting point. Is that true, or again, does it depend on your net worth and your income and what kind of cash flow you have?
This one I'm not going to go down the it depends road. I would say that's at least the minimum. I mean, at least the minimum should be 10% that you're saving out of anything or everything you're making.
For retirement specifically. So over and above 10% would include income replacement, your bucket for income replacement, and your emergency fund then.
Definitely.
So you're looking at more than that.
You're right. And you might have hit one of those goals, or you might already have that. But you're right. On an ongoing basis, that's the key to me. I don't know, Cole, if you would have had a different thought.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially starting early, that's probably a reasonable bar to set. If you're wanting to retire much earlier, and depending on the lifestyle you're setting, it could be a lot more. Or if we're thinking maybe we're retiring later, it could be less. Or if we're coming at it, we already have millions of dollars and we're just working for fun, maybe we don't need to save. We just spend whatever we earn because that's why we're working. So it's going to change. But just getting started, getting that good habit in place, I think 10's probably a great place to be.
Well, I'll tell a quick story here to tie it together. So if you have that person who's making $700,000-$800,000 a year in sales, they're doing great, they're killing it. All of a sudden, the comp structure changes, the technology they were selling changes. You know what? When you were doing your planning, making $800,000 a year, and you planned on that for 20 or 30 years, that shows one savings rate. But if you only knew you were going to get that for 5 or 10 years, it is going to show a different savings rate. So we have to acknowledge that. So the idea of, well, what do I need? What's the minimum? I feel like that's where people start. But hopefully you're also thinking about, what's the most I could be able to save and get by? Because if you're able to start saving half of that, 40% of that, some bigger number like that, that really gives you a lot more leeway, a lot more flexibility. So again, I hate to say it depends. I would set the highest bar that you can. And for those who may already have a family, lifestyle set, you're starting from behind almost. You've built all your other expenses. Well, then you have to ease into it. Maybe you're going up 1 or 2% per year in what you're saving. But if you're somebody who's just getting that new position or that new raise, I would go over what that 10% is even, just because once you get used to your lifestyle and spending or seeing where your money goes, it's so hard to increase that.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great point, because I think about professional athletes, too, where generally there's a pretty firm timeline. Like, you're probably not going to be in that role when you're in your 50s. Right. So the idea is, well, how can we accelerate that, where 10% probably isn't enough, Tony? You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. That kind of brings me to the insurance conversation, because I know in the past we've had people that have come through that maybe don't have life insurance because they have a large nest egg saved, put aside, or they don't have estate planning because they have a giant portfolio. You know, how do you address the myth that insurance is just you're overpaying for something you might not ever use?
I actually heard Tony say this one before, so I'll take this one. I like it a lot. It's basically the same as auto insurance, right? The idea that we probably don't want it, probably don't want to pay for it, but we sure are glad when we have it, and we're required to have it in that case. But life insurance, the same idea applies, is, well, we may not want to pay for it. And if we have term life insurance, sure, we might not get anything back for it. But if something happens to that loved one and we're not set up otherwise, we haven't saved enough, we haven't paid off the house, we haven't gotten the kids through college, I can't think of a better way that we can cover those other goals than to have that through life insurance. So as far as the amounts, the terms, the whatever, that's going to depend on the actual circumstance. So it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all there. But if there's a goal that we haven't yet covered, or we're still in our working careers and we haven't saved enough for retirement, there's a lot of reason to consider life insurance.
Yeah, good point.
There's, I'll say, products, not even tools, but mm-hmm. the products that are out there that get sold to people that are sold as almost Swiss Army knives of finance. You can pay for college, you can go to mortgage, you can invest, you can basically whatever you dream of, we say we can do it. And that's what you might hear on some commercials, and it's a very vague promise. And to me, that's another myth. I mean, the idea that there's a one-size-fits-all, even us, we're generalists. I'm not a specialist in one area. I don't sell insurance. I'm not current on my estate planning test with the bar. These are things that we go to the experts for, and we can be independent, pick them out. We don't have any ties to any of those groups. But once you're in that realm of product, well, then you're captive to that company, that bigger organization, and you're really limited sometimes in your scope just by the nature of the contract. So when you think about, well, I have a financial person, I've got this person helping me, that may be a myth in itself. Are they really a comprehensive planner for you, or are they truly just your accountant? Mm-hmm. Are they just your broker? Are they just that person who maybe does both in the same office under two different licenses, but they don't coordinate anything else? Mm-hmm. So I'm rambling on here, but these are the things that you might say, oh, I've got my finance. If your accountant is your finance person, there are areas of your plan that I would almost guarantee you're missing.
Yeah.
It's not to dismiss or say you don't need that accountant either, by the way.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. We have a lot of people who feel that way, and I think this in my mind, I think it's the marketing. You can watch a 5 minutes of television and have a couple of commercials come up where it's the wild, wild west. Everybody thinks they're a financial advisor. I sit and watch it in amazement. It must be frustrating for you guys to see that, because people availing themselves to be comprehensive and thorough when they're really leaning more towards. Product a taxation sales. or investment aspect of it. Okay, sort of lastly, akin to myths are examples of bad financial planning advice and unreliable trends that we see on social media often. There's a whole generation of people that are just following TikTok. They're getting their political information over TikTok. They're getting their financial advice over TikTok. They're getting parenting advice over TikTok. And I just don't, that doesn't sit well with me. And there's definitely a lot of get-rich-quick schemes. So how do you approach that?
I'm genuinely hoping the latest, what do they call it, like the Chase hack or whatever, where essentially you take a check, deposit that in an ATM at Chase, and you just withdraw a whole bunch of money. Turns out that's illegal.
Right.
And a lot of people got into a lot of trouble because you're basically just stealing money from Chase. So I'm hoping as more of those things start to blow up that this advice probably isn't the right financial advice that you want to take from just some random person on TikTok. That's probably what it's going to take for us to finally start to look at other avenues to receive.
But Cole, they've got a catchy reel. It's a quick video.
They're
in a nice car. It's probably a good-looking person. They're giving me tax advice.
It's
they're showing their nice watch. I mean, come on, man. How do I not listen to them? But honestly, that's what people are seeing. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where some of this fraudulent advice, as you've just said, whether it was PPP advice, the Payroll Protection Program from years ago. I mean, we saw a lot of fraud there that was promoted online, and other programs where the abuses, even the tax system, you know, what's deductible, what isn't, you know, these sorts of things. You might catch a reel or something where they're given just patently fraudulent advice, not even wrong, but you're going to get in trouble if you follow it, like Cole said.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no disclaimer there. I myself, I'll admit it, I'm kind of a bounty hunter. You know,
are you reporting these people?
Well, you know, there are some groups like the IRS and the SEC that when you have a blatant fraud like that, if they get any financial remuneration, that's the term on the check. But if you get any remuneration from them, it's because, hey, they busted them. They fined them. They weren't supposed to do that. It's happened. You might see those things, whether it was with crypto or other things. I mean, that's how these things come about.
That. Yeah. Good for you. You're making a difference is what I'm hearing.
Oh, no, no. We're doing one little bit at a time. But again, it's few far between. But when you see such blatant fraud, there are ways to report it, whether it's through the Ohio Board of Commerce, you know, whether it's through the FBI even. I mean, just Google it. There's a real quick website for FTC fraud that's out there. So when you see some of this bad advice or you see a bum website, there are ways to take an action to hopefully prevent someone else, a well-meaning person, from going down that road. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think maybe a well-meaning person is going to scam like you said, Cole, but there are some other things out there that, you know what, if you didn't know better, they might sound good, but when you really know better, talk to an independent advisor, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, I think really what it gets down to is the age-old, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And that's the case with a lot of these TikTok get-rich-quick schemes, mm-hmm. where a lot of those, it's either just patently false, Tony, to your point, may even be fraudulent or completely illegal, where it's just maybe that's not the best place to mm-hmm. get it.
And it's, but they got that nice car and that nice watch, and it's a catchy quick reel.
But I think it's going to take a few more blow-ups like this Chase one to hopefully start unraveling some of that.
That's a good place to land. That's it for today. Thanks, guys. This was informative and fun. We appreciate you tuning in, and we hope you'll catch us on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.